concrete scar in the earth meant to represent a river. But this was now an immovable river, no longer controlled by nature, but instead controlled by humans. And this is where we sit today. But for me, this is less of a story about a dispute between nations and more about a dispute against nature. To quote Javier Loella, war captain of the Isleta del Sur Pueblo tribe, who've lived along the river for hundreds of years, he says, "To me, it's just a geopolitical division among these two relatively new nations. It's just a political barrier that divides two sides of the earth that have always been here."
That was Charlie Garcia with the piece "The Border is Alive," brought to us by In Confianza from Pulso. We'll link to them in our episode page at radioproject.org. And that does it for today's show. Thanks for listening to Making Contact. I'm Lucy Kang.
Tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Locus Focus, a weekly conversation about our place on the planet, every Monday morning at 10 on KBOO Community Radio. Each week, host Barbara Bernstein talks with local, regional, and national experts, activists, and policymakers about climate change, river protection, the transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy, salmon restoration, forest management, and all the other things that are critical to protect our planet. That's every Monday at 10 a.m. on your community radio station, KBOO.
Poetry is my sing-songy sermon. My duck walk to freedom, dramatic dip to glow up, breast bound by ace, face beats, inviting prayer as prophetic involution, incepting the now of justice.
Until the church, in some ways, becomes more progressive, more willing to talk, to acknowledge sexual diversity, to acknowledge sexuality per se, then it's going to be a tremendous obstacle.
Say amen, somebody.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Turkey's family values set the stage for queer oppression. More U.S.-based corporations dump workplace diversity programs. And filmmaker Riggs and healer Lakaya speak truth to power. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Marcos Najera.
And I'm Sarah Montague.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending January 18th, 2025. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is declaring 2025 the Year of the Family. Regurgitating familiar homophobic rhetoric, Erdogan claims that the struggle for LGBTQ equality is part of a foreign conspiracy to undermine Turkish values. In his words, "It is our common responsibility to protect our children and youth from harmful trends and perverse ideologies. Neoliberal cultural trends are crossing borders and penetrating all corners of the world. They also lead to LGBT and other movements gaining ground." Erdogan says that what he calls gender neutralization policies are a battering ram against the traditional family. Taking the victim stance, the president complains, "Anyone who defends nature and the family is subject to heavy oppression." Erdogan announced the new initiative during a speech in the capital city of Ankara on January 13th. The plan is to reverse declining birth rates and offers financial incentives to young families to have several children. LGBTQ pride celebrations have been banned in Turkey since Erdogan gained power in 2014. Riot police in major Turkish cities like Ankara and Istanbul have used tear gas and rubber bullets to make arrests and disperse crowds attempting to celebrate queer culture.
More U.S.-based transnational companies are obeying in advance imperatives to restrict or totally abandon workplace diversity programs, while others are bucking that trend. Nissan Motors, McDonald's, Amazon, and Meta are joining about a dozen other major corporations that have bowed to conservative pressure so far in the new year. Right-wing rabble-rouser Robbie Starbuck is taking credit for the shifts after his threats to rally social media followers to turn consumer boycotts on such woke companies. Starbuck has worked diligently to make diversity, equity, and inclusion corporate dirty words. The regression began with the pilgrimages of Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg and Amazon founder Jeff Bezos to kiss incoming President Donald Trump's ring. Both ponied up millions of dollars for his inauguration. Surplus funds from Trump's first inauguration remain unaccounted for. Changes in policy at Meta-owned Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and Threads are opening the door to unregulated anti-queer hate speech. Amazon has removed statements in support of LGBTQ rights from its policy pages.
At least so far, Apple is maintaining its diverse workplace programs and policies, although openly gay CEO Tim Cook has personally donated $1 million to the Trump inaugural. The boards of Apple and giant retailer Costco are urging shareholders to vote against anti-DEI resolutions submitted by the conservative think tank National Center for Public Policy Research. They argue that diversity programs are discriminatory and pose financial risks, according to The Advocate. The Costco resolution claims, with 310,000 employees, Costco likely has at least 200,000 employees who are potentially victims of this type of illegal discrimination because they are white, Asian, male, or straight. Accordingly, even if only a fraction of those employees were to file a suit, the cost to Costco could be tens of millions of dollars. Apple's board has advised a no vote ahead of their shareholders' annual meeting. The recommendation argues that the proposal inappropriately attempts to restrict Apple's ability to manage its own ordinary business operations. It also reaffirms Apple's commitment to being an equal opportunity employer, one that does not discriminate in recruiting, hiring, training, or promoting on any basis protected by law. The Costco annual shareholder meeting is scheduled for January 23rd, and Apple's convenes on February 25th. Shareholder-initiated resolutions are often non-binding and rarely succeed.
U.S. federal protections from bias in education based on sexual orientation or gender identity have been struck down by a federal court in Kentucky. U.S. District Judge Danny C. Reeves decided on January 9th that the Biden administration overstepped its authority with its interpretation of the law that bans discrimination based on sex. Reeves ruled that it was up to the lawmakers to delineate the protections under Title IX of the 1972 Education Amendments. Lawsuits initiated by the attorneys general of Republican-controlled states have stripped LGBTQ students of Title IX protections in more than half the United States. Reeves ruled specifically on the lawsuit filed by Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, and West Virginia. He also found that the inclusive interpretation violates free speech rights because it requires teachers and school administrators to use chosen names and pronouns consistent with the student's gender identity. Glad Sarah Kate Ellis was among queer advocacy group leaders to criticize the ruling. In her words, "All students deserve to be themselves and safe in school. Transgender and non-binary students are among the most bullied and harassed. Protections for the most vulnerable students make the entire school safer and stronger for everyone." The district court ruling will likely be appealed.
Finally, a bill that denies federal funding to schools that allow transgender students to compete in girls' and women's sports was passed by the U.S. House of Representatives. Texas Democrats Vicente Gonzalez and Henry Cuellar joined the thin Republican majority on January 16th. Gonzalez and Cuellar both have anti-trans legislative histories. Opponents charge that the ironically named Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act actually holds more dangers for girls and women, as described by Democratic Representative Suzanne Bonamici of Oregon.
I rise today in strong opposition to the so-called Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act. This bill will empower child predators, putting students across the country at increased risk. This legislation would revoke all federal funding from schools that include transgender students on girls and women's sports teams, and this is damaging and discriminatory to transgender students who benefit, as all students do, from participating in school sports, and also damaging to the entire school that's threatened because federal funding benefits all students. Keep in mind, colleagues, that as of last month, of the approximately 510,000 athletes who play at the NCAA level, 10 are transgender. Not 10,000, 10 out of 510,000.
Oregon Congressperson Suzanne Bonamici was joined by Vermont Representative Becca Ballant. Ballant co-chairs the Democratic LGBTQ caucus.
Trans Americans are not the problem. This obsession with monitoring kids' genitals is absolutely the problem. Let's be clear. This is about kids. My kids, your kids, all kids, even elementary school kids playing basketball. I'm a mom of two teens. I'm a former teacher. I know what kids are going through in school. They're already self-conscious about their bodies. They just want to be on the soccer field with their friends. They certainly do not want to be humiliated by members of Congress. So come on, let's talk about what enforcement looks like, because you guys, you don't want to talk about it. We know there is only one logical conclusion to this. This is interrogation of young girls about their bodies. This is asking people to show them what is underneath their underwear. So it's vile, it's twisted.
The gentlelady's time has expired.
It's not protecting anyone, it puts our children at risk. And actually, I urge colleagues on both sides
of the aisle. The gentlelady's time has expired.
To reject this government overreach. I yield back.
That was Vermont Representative Becca Ballant. Several queer advocacy groups are predictably members of the Condemnation Chorus. Allison Scott of the Campaign for Southern Equality urged the Senate to do the right thing here, refuse to exclude and marginalize children, and reject this legislation. The incoming Trump administration has vowed to eliminate any federal protections based on gender identity and to abolish all gender-affirming health care. It could essentially deny the existence of transgender and non-binary people. You could be next.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending January 18th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help us keep an ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Sarah Montague. Stay healthy.
And I'm Marcos Najera. Stay safe.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens, Noah in the Noah's Ark movie and TV series, and you've discovered This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities and those who love them.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
I have a dream.
The life of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is being honored this week. That dream King said was deeply rooted in the American dream is still frequently belied by the American reality. Nearly three decades after his indelible call for equality rang through the U.S. Capitol Mall an award-winning documentary that revealed the lives of black gay men was still apparently too much for television. Writer-director Marlon Riggs talked about the controversy over Tongues Untied in 1990 by phone with This Way Out's Joey Flyer in Los Angeles and in studio with our Mike Alkale in San Francisco.
Homosexuality, and combined with race, that is black homosexuality, is even in many ways a double or triple taboo. So yes, Tongues Untied has created this firestorm of controversy, not only from the right, and that's entirely predictable, but also from a number of so-called progressives, those people who run public broadcasting institutions and consider themselves enlightened, who have been very down on the work and, of course, as you know, refuse to show it.
Yes, why? Who?
Stations from Houston, Detroit, Tampa, Florida. In fact, two-thirds, as I understand it now, of public television stations in the United States did not show Tongues Untied when it was aired nationally as part of the Point of View POV series only a few weeks ago. And the reasons that were often offered was that the work was offensive to community standards. No one, of course, bothered to probe in too much detail what they meant by community and whose standards they were so-called protecting. And the other objection to Tongues Untied really centered on the language. Many stations claimed that the language was too obscene, too offensive. Even some claimed it was pornographic and therefore couldn't be broadcast. And of course, no one bothered to examine or understand how the language was used as a reference to the kinds of experiences and expression of the rage and torment that black gay men feel in the society. What I've seen often in the homophobic diatribes against Tongues Untied is a really singling out of me as if I am this one lone, eccentric, silly voice crying out for justice, and that there's not a community, in fact, that is demanding a reckoning, a demanding acknowledgement, and that, in fact, Tongues Untied itself is a collaboration of many artists, of many different communities that are also making that demand. And knocking one of us down is not going to bludgeon all of us back into silence, into closets. We will continue to make our lives and our voices heard and known.
Black people, unfortunately, in general, do not discuss sexuality, do not raise the issue of sexuality or the issue of relations between men and women, let alone men and men and women and women, in any kind of real context. The most you will hear are jokes or sort of sly statements or witty sort of comic things said, but any kind of real discussion of sexuality is by and large absent in the black community.
While the reasons for these attitudes are complex, Riggs says it's partially a defense against the white-held myth of black hypersexuality, with the imaging of blacks as hypersexual creatures. And when it comes to homosexuality, Riggs finds the church, with its long Bible Belt tradition, a potent force in keeping homophobia alive.
Abomination! It's an abomination! Mankind shall not lie with mankind, for it is an abomination!
Until the church, in some ways, becomes more progressive, more willing to talk, to acknowledge sexual diversity, to acknowledge sexuality per se, then it's going to be a tremendous obstacle in terms of dealing with crises of AIDS, teenage pregnancy, venereal disease, explosions of venereal disease infections within the black community, and all kinds of problems that deal with sexuality in our community. It's a very simple kind of solution, and part of it is just for black gay men, black bisexual men, lesbians of color, lesbians in the general black community to stand up and to acknowledge themselves, to affirm themselves. The problem is not only the oppression, if you will, by the church and other areas of leadership within the community, but it's also our complicity of silence.
That was the late Marlon Riggs, writer and director of the 1989 film Tongues Untied. It featured the late author activist Essex Hemphill.
The message that went out to us as black gay artists and then to our communities, America, seemingly the America that's controlled or the America that's told what it can hear and what it can see, is not to know that black gays and lesbians are visible. This is Essex Hemphill reminding you that you've tuned into This Way Out.
Homophobia, turn me around, keep on walking, keep on talking.
Free at last! Free at last! Thank God Almighty, we are free at last!
Martin Luther King's speech at the 1963 March on Washington may be the best-known sermon of all time, but it carried a liberating message that's not usually associated with sermons anymore. Lakaya is a spoken word consultant and public health cultural shapeshifter who's known for her series of Sermons I Wish I'd Heard. The poem Duck Walk to Freedom is an excerpt from one of them.
Poetry is my laying burdens down, my picking up clocks dropped passing in masquerade, masking truth within complex poetic metaphor. Lil' me choir boy, fearful of diaries impending betrayal if mama, daddy, brother, sister find it. Poetry is my confessional, my standing on ancestral refusal to hide behind color-coded bandanas, nail-painted pinky promises to no longer bear false witness without packing pews with proud, chosen families, embodying interdependence needed to relieve the dam, holding back all the tears we never cried, while we watch in full confidence that rainbows and the resulting waterfall indeed will show. Just in time to slow the grief, palm earth to feet, floating now in collective self-esteem. Poetry is my sing-songy sermon, my duck walk to freedom, dramatic dip to glow up, breast bound by a space beat, inviting prayer as prophetic involution, incepting the now of justice. To live up, glow up, bless up, vogue down Kochic aisles, flash mobbing scripture set to house music. The kingdom is nigh, the kingdom is nigh, we the kingdom are nigh. To lay our burdens down. Give up everything that has never served us as offering, worthy of altering the universe in our every soul until celebratory balls are all the church knows. And God saw that it was good. Say amen, somebody.
Lakaya joins us on This Way Out to talk about Lakaya's work and how you can participate, starting with the meaning of Lakaya.
I go just by my name, no pronouns, and that is because my name means home. And that wasn't the intended meaning for my name when my dad put letters together on a little sheet of yellow paper in the hospital waiting for me to arrive. However, in Haitian Creole, my name means home. And also in Isxhosa, in South Africa, my name means home. And it's wild, and I mention this because I named my business, my consulting space and a retreat space, Home Place, before I knew any of this. So I curate spaces for us to come back home to our self-healing power by transforming physical spaces and like office spaces, church classrooms, things like that, into spaces where we can do exactly that and for us to feel supported in the process. My hope is that in these spaces, people can experience what it feels like to heal outside of isolation, to be witnessed by other folks, to dare to be seen in the process of unraveling and also re-anchoring in our truth and our true selves. The work that I do in the spaces that I curate, I feel like if they existed at a metaphoric intersection, it would be, you know, the liberation education that we get from bell hooks, may she rest in peace and power, and also the liberation arts, because that's how we creatively express ourselves into the world. Then we also have the liberation theology, the liberation spirituality, connecting us to everything, you know, bringing us back home to the connection. And I say that like kind of fusing two words together, kinship and connection. So K-I-N and connection. And then, and also being serious and real about the fact that for many of us, organized religion has been used to give up our authenticity, has incentivized that in so many ways, and has also found its home in our mainstream culture. And so that's the third. And then the fourth intersection would be liberation psychology, because this is where and how we move that fight, flight, freeze, fawn energy out of the body.
How did you come to turn that into the writing of sermons you wish you had heard?
I began officially writing it when I was teaching at UCLA. Students who signed up for the course became an ensemble, a theater troupe, and we would devise theater shows based on their real experiences around comprehensive sexual health education. And we would take that raw, honest storytelling and fuse it with humor. We would rewrite, you know, popular songs at the time with different lyrics, and then we would tour it to, at that time, the LAUSD high schools. I was hearing very often that who and what comes into the room when people are thinking about bodily autonomy or making decisions for themselves or individuating, you know, is religion. And Theater of the Oppressed is very much about rehearsal for the revolution. So we imagine theater as a green room for rehearsing, practicing different ways of being so that the unwanted life outcomes that our communities are experiencing can cease, right? So our kind of organizing tactics, strategies are based in how we can self-heal, how we can self-advocate, how we can identify the things that we can change and move on those things, but still very clearly committed to systems change. The first part of the piece just explores my life from that perspective growing up, how I knew that I was queer. So yeah, that's the first part of it. And then it turns into the impacts on mental health and how I tried to pray to God to heal me, fix me. And when it wasn't happening, I got curious as to why. And so that kind of led me to a hermeneutical study of the Bible around what those clobber texts actually mean and learning God's heart through the original languages. And so then the second part of the piece is, you know, it comes after this moment where I feel like the world is telling me that it would be better off without me. And so I shift my costume and everything into the pastor, the preacher, giving the sermon that I wish little Kai heard growing up. And that would hopefully, I imagine, would have prevented me from getting to that place of not wanting to be here. And I pray will support others to not find themselves at that space.
What's the main tip you would give someone to do this kind of exercise of writing a sermon they wish they had heard?
I think there is sometimes a fear that if we are too truthful with ourselves, then somehow we'll get arrested in development. The truth is that we get arrested in development when we aren't real with ourselves and about what we've been through and what it takes to move through the thing. And so I guess my tip would be to be unapologetically authentic, transparent, and honest with yourself first.
LaKaya and This Way Out invite you to come up with your own sermon you wish you'd heard. You can check out the full version of LaKaya's sermon at thiswayout.org or follow LaKaya's link in bio on Instagram at LaKhiYia. Then share your own sermon with an Instagram reel tagged at LaKaya and at This Way Out Radio, or email it to info@thiswayout.org. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Marcos Nahara and Sarah Montague and produced by Brian DeShazer. Lucia Chappelle produced this week's features. The Steve Miller Band, Sweet Honey and the Rock, and LaKaya performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks John Beaupre of Los Angeles, California, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KOPN Columbia, Missouri, WRIR Richmond, Virginia, BridgeRadioPA.com Perth Andover, New Brunswick, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune into KBOO every third Saturday at 10 p.m. for Query. Dive into the spectrum of queer music as we explore artists across time and genre.
It's on my mind every hour of every day.
That's Query every third Saturday at 10 p.m. on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. And I lose control, think I follow
home. We combed the archives of This Way Out.
People of Dade County, the normal majority, have said enough, enough, enough.
That was Anita Bryant at her victory celebration.
What was your reaction tonight when you heard about the results in the Florida election?
I had to fight to love myself that much more. Fear is an ugly thing, and the only way we can combat it is by loving.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Ghana's new president declares anti-queer family values bill dead. Wedding bells ring for Thailand's lesbian and gay couples, and how Anita Bryant accidentally boosted LGBTQ activism. Those stories and more this week, because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Wendy Natividad.
And I'm David Hunt.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending January 25th, 2025. Ghana's Promotion of Proper Human Sexual Rights and Ghanaian Family Values Bill is effectively dead. The virulently anti-queer measure was overwhelmingly approved by Parliament in February 2024, but outgoing President Nana Akufo-Addo refused to sign the hot potato law until the Supreme Court ruled it to be constitutional. That ruling is still pending. The parliamentary session ended, and new President John Mahama took office on January 7th. He declared the bill's demise this week. Issues involving proper family values education of the West African nation's children were at the center of that bill. It would have imposed prison sentences of up to 3 years for any Ghanaian who publicly identified as LGBTQ, and up to 5 years for anyone who organized or funded a queer equality group. pro-queer activities in the presence of minors would have boosted the sentence to 10 years. Mahama told a delegation from the Ghana Catholic Bishops' Conference, "If we are teaching our values in schools, we wouldn't need to pass a bill to enforce family values. We need to agree on a curriculum that instills these values in our children as they grow." Queer activists in Ghana are cautiously optimistic that Mahama's words may imply a rollback on government attacks against LGBTQ people. Colonial-era laws still criminalize same-gender sex, and there are no discrimination protections or legal rights. LGBT plus rights Ghana communications director Berenoy Bourinoy told The Washington Blade, "The fear, particularly among LGBT plus activists, is that the emphasis on education could inadvertently foster homophobia in Ghanaian children. If the content is not carefully structured, it could perpetuate harmful stereotypes and deepen existing prejudices."
A decades-long struggle to bring marriage equality to Thailand ended with wedding bells on January 23rd. More than 1,000 gay and lesbian couples registered their marriages on the first day that legislation approved by Parliament in June 2024 took effect. The law amended the country's civil code to guarantee married queer couples full legal, medical, financial inheritance, and adoption rights. It also changes the civil code to use gender-neutral rather than binary language. About 200 couples tied the knot in a mass wedding ceremony at a high-end Bangkok retail mall that rolled out a literal rainbow pride carpet. Rainbow flags flew outside the Parliament building. Weddings took place in Thai embassies in other countries, according to a government announcement. Thailand is the first country in Southeast Asia to open civil marriage to same-gender couples. In all of Asia, it follows Taiwan and Nepal.
Transgender people are near the top of the list of marginalized people targeted in United States President Donald Trump's inaugural salvo against human and civil rights. Speaking plainly in his meandering, bias-fueled January 20th address, he carried out one of his principal campaign promises.
"It will henceforth be the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female."
Trump signed a head-spinning flurry of more than 200 executive orders on day one, some that contradict clear constitutional provisions. One order virtually denies the existence of transgender people. The Defending Women from Gender Ideology Extremism and Restoring Biological Truth to the Federal Government Edict defines gender as only male or female based on immutable biological reality. It calls for government agencies to remove all radical gender ideology guidance, communication, policies, and forms. The option of X as a gender marker on U.S. passports or visas will be eliminated. Federal funds will no longer support gender transition in U.S. prisons. It categorizes the failure to honor the chosen names or preferred pronouns of trans and non-binary people as a matter of free speech.
Trump took the opportunity to slap both his predecessor and transgender rights by rescinding outgoing President Joe Biden's executive order that required all federal agencies to address anti-trans bias in their policies and actions, a marked difference between Biden's first day in office and Trump's. Another Trump executive order rescinded Biden's directive to open service in the U.S. military to qualified transgender enlistees. He's expected to issue a new ban soon. Trump has revoked almost 80 of Biden's fairness and human rights-related executive orders, by the advocate's count. Diversity, equity, and inclusion policies and programs in all federal agencies have similarly been shut down by the stroke of Trump's pen. The wicked wish list of the reborn Trump administration includes several things that are beyond his reach, like changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America.
U.S. embassies will not be flying any flags other than the traditional stars and stripes. The policy was issued by newly sworn-in Secretary of State Marco Rubio, formerly senator from the Don't Say Gay state of Florida. It means that banners like LGBTQ Pride, Black Lives Matter flags, and such can no longer fly over those foreign U.S. compounds. Prisoner of war slash missing in action emblems and the wrongful detainees flag are the exceptions. A federal judge has already declared one Trump executive order out of bounds. his attempt to overturn an amendment to the Constitution guaranteeing U.S. citizenship to anyone born on U.S. soil. Another Trump order revokes the well-established Equal Employment Opportunity Act of 1965, signed by President Lyndon B. Johnson. That bedrock civil rights provision prohibited bias in the workplace based on race, color, religion, and national origin by those organizations receiving federal contracts and subcontracts. 2 years later, sex was added to those characteristics. Work-at-home programs for all federal employees are being halted. Queer advocates are discovering that references to LGBTQ+ identities and HIV-related resources have vanished overnight from whitehouse.gov and several other federal agency websites.
An explosion of calls to LGBTQ youth crisis hotlines is one of the most tangible, real-life results of Trump's election, inaugural vitriol, and dozens of anti-queer executive orders. The Rainbow Youth Project USA Foundation told The Advocate that it usually handles less than 3,800 calls per month. They fielded more than 8,000 calls in November and December following Trump's election. On Inauguration Day, they got more than 1,400 calls. The story was the same at the Trevor Project, another nonprofit group supporting the mental health of LGBTQ young people. Calls to their crisis lines surged to almost double in October and November. Inauguration Day saw a 33% increase.
Finally, the Right Reverend Marian Edgar Buddy made Donald Trump squirm at the traditional inaugural prayer service in the National Cathedral on January 21st. The Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Washington, D.C., dared to challenge the newly installed president's anti-queer and anti-immigrant statements and policies face-to-face from the pulpit.
Let me make one final plea, Mr. President. Millions have put their trust in you. And as you told the nation yesterday, you have felt the providential hand of a loving God. In the name of our God, I ask you to have mercy upon the people in our country who are scared now. There are gay, lesbian, and transgender children in Democratic, Republican, and independent families, some who fear for their lives. And the people who pick our crops and clean our office buildings, who labor in poultry farms and meat packing plants, who wash the dishes after we eat in restaurants and work the night shifts in hospitals, they may not be citizens or have the proper documentation. But the vast majority of immigrants are not criminals. They pay taxes and are good neighbors. They are faithful members of our churches and mosques, synagogues, wadara, and temples. I ask you to have mercy, Mr. President, on those in our communities whose children fear that their parents will be taken away. May God grant us the strength and courage to honor the dignity of every human being, to speak the truth to one another in love, and walk humbly with each other and our God for the good of all people in this nation and the world. Amen.
That was the Right Reverend Marian Edgar Buddy, Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Washington, D.C., quite literally speaking truth to power. Predictably, she says that right-wing trolls are wishing her dead.
That's News Wrap, Global Queer News with Attitude, for the week ending January 25th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazor, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt. Stay healthy.
And I'm Wendy Natividad. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
and through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Come to the forest, sunshine's free. Pour yourself a healthy glass of energy. Orange juice with natural vitamin C. From the forest, sunshine.
She couldn't have been more wholesome in her flowered A-line flute-sleeved frock, strolling through an orange grove with an animated orange bird in her hand. Who would have thought that benign juice promoter would become the LGBTQ community's arch nemesis? This Way Out's archivist extraordinaire Brian DeShazer memorializes the pop singer whose anti-queer campaign ultimately backfired.
This Way Out remembers the late Anita Bryant and what she meant to the queer community in the 1970s and beyond. We'll listen to rare audio from This Way Out archives, newly digitized thanks to the American Archive of Public Broadcasting. We'll also be joined by Lucia Chappell, who covered the Los Angeles March for IMRU at Pacifica Station KPFK. Anita Bryant, a former Miss Oklahoma, Grammy-nominated singer and prominent huckster of orange juice, became known over the second half of her life for her outspoken opposition to gay rights, has died. She was 84. Bryant died December 16, 2024, at her home in Edmond, Oklahoma. We turn the clock back to June 10, 1988, for Greg Gordon's introduction on This Way Out to their commemoration of the Orange Tuesday march and protest of 1977.
As volunteers with IMRU, the gay and lesbian show on KPFK in Los Angeles, Lucia and I covered the Dade County election. So, for our younger brothers and sisters, and for you uninitiated non-gays, this historical feature may help you understand why the name Anita Bryant has become a symbol of our ongoing battle against legalized bigotry. We'll trace the story beginning in January of 1977 with a news report by our colleague Gary Taylor.
In Florida, the Dade County Commission gave its final approval to an ordinance which would prohibit discrimination against gays in the areas of housing, public accommodation, and employment, thus endorsing the concept of social and legal equality for Miami's homophile community. The commission, which had tentatively passed the controversial ordinance when it was first proposed in late December, voted 5-3 in favor after an emotional 2-hour public hearing in which opponents of the measure strongly voiced their objections. Among the opponents was singer Anita Bryant, who, like Pat Boone, is probably best known for her endorsement of Milk and the singing of hymns. Responding to the commission's pro-gay stand, Miss Bryant said, "We're not going to take this sitting down."
Flanked by a cluster of religious fundamentalists and her ever-present manager husband, former disc jockey Bob Green, Anita Bryant kicked off her campaign to have the gay rights ordinance repealed by showing the press a pro-gay flyer and claiming that it had been distributed at a Coral Gables high school. She said that gays were recruiting Dade County's children. Gay spokespersons, of course, rebutted Anita's Save Our Children attack, but both sides in the campaign became increasingly strident. A boycott of Florida orange juice, for whom Bryant was the TV spokesperson, became the national response of gays and lesbians and their friends. Meanwhile, Bryant extended her crusade by helping to defeat the Equal Rights Amendment in Florida. With two polls taken showing Dade County voters' support of the gay rights ordinance, gays faced the June 7th referendum in a spirit of false optimism. Bryant's charges were so outrageous, the thinking went, that few would really take her seriously.
Here is a summary of what's been going on for the period ending May 10th, 1977. Now, our dear orange juice lady opponent has been shooting from the hip again. In an interview in this month's Miami Magazine, she stated that because a Southern California town had passed an ordinance similar to Miami's, God was punishing homosexuality because, as she said, now California is having the worst drought in history. And the reason why homosexuals are called fruits is because God says that men are trees and the new life is the fruit of the womb. This is Bob Basker, Executive Director for the Dade County Coalition for Human Rights.
The people of Dade County, the normal majority, have said enough
Enough.
Anita Bryant and her fundamentalist followers had been taken seriously. The polls had aired embarrassingly as Miami-area voters repealed the Dade County Gay Rights Ordinance by a more than 2-to-1 margin. Jim Kepner, now curator of the International Gay and Lesbian Archives here in Los Angeles, picks up the story of Orange Tuesday.
June 7th was a thunderclap. Thousands of gays all over the country and the world were shocked out of their closets. Demonstrations larger than any imaginable before occurred in New York, San Francisco, Norfolk, Houston, New Orleans, Salt Lake City, Chicago, and many other cities where a gay demonstration would before have been unthinkable.
The vote was heard across the country in queer communities loud and clear. From the Pacifica Radio Archives, what is known as Orange Tuesday was reported on by the Fruit Punch Gay Collective for KPFA in Berkeley, California, just across the bay from San Francisco.
To begin tonight's presentation on the events happening in and around Miami, we'll start with a survey of a demonstration that happened last night spontaneously at the news of the vote.
We're walking up 17th Street, and we can hear a group of faggots screaming up here somewhere. Oh yes, here they come. They're now marching down 17th Street. Let's see if we can get some of what they're saying on the tape here. Some of the demonstrators are carrying candles. It's a torchlight march. Some chanting, it looks like a lot of people. They are breast to breast all the way across the street. They keep coming. The demonstration breast to breast all the way across the street is at least a couple of blocks long at this point, and the demonstration has only been going for a little while. Chanting, hey, hey, ho, ho, Christian bigots have got to go. They're still coming. It's more than 2 blocks long. There must be hundreds and hundreds of people here. This is all spontaneous. We're now walking up.
Let me just say that for those people that don't understand this, just that Anita will not stop with gay people. When the human rights of any individual is threatened, whether it's an American or any individual in the world, someone else will be next, whether it's the Jews next or whether it's the Catholics next. Don't forget, Anita is a Baptist. Maybe she'll go for the Japanese again, or maybe she'll go for Russian-American citizens. Who knows who she'll go for next? But in a society that's supposed to be free, when a person comes along and decides that they're going to deny some group of individuals the right to live, the right to have and keep their children, the right to be free citizens on the streets and to work in safety and privacy, then you have a mad woman on your hands. You have another Adolf Hitler.
When you heard about the results in the Florida election, I had to fight to love myself that much more. Fear is an ugly thing, and the only way we can combat it is by loving.
The people united will never be defeated. 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 Out of the bar in the street. Out of the bar in the street. Out of the bar in the street.
Now the people are chanting out of the bars and into the street.
You are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. This week, remembering Anita Bryant.
Now turning off Market up Polk Street. The crowd has taken over the entire intersection.
I think it's just the fact that if it can pass in Dade County, it's about time that everybody got out and showed that they were gay and showed that there are lots of us and that they can't oppress us just because we love the way we love.
Were you recruited to be a faggot by your school teachers as a child?
No, it came out quite naturally.
Why are you here tonight?
Because I'm a lesbian woman.
Good evening. You're listening to Fruit Punch, California's oldest and most widely heard gay men's radio show. I just found out today and I think is real telling. Let's go to one more call. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, is this Kevin?
Yes, it is.
This is Wood Massey.
Oh, thank you, Wood, for your wonderful demonstration interviews that we had in the beginning of the show.
Oh, thank you. There's one more thing that I wanted to say to close with. An open letter to my father, who wrote me a letter today saying that he would take Anita Bryant one step further and have faggots done away with for religious reasons. Dear Dad, the letter... this also connects a little with the last call. Dear Dad, the letter I got from you today suggesting that faggots be stoned to death and the results of the Anita Bryant election in Florida yesterday have set you and I back a step or two again. All I could possibly suggest at this time is that you pray for God to have mercy on your soul for doing this to me, that you abandon these murderous ideas, and that you concentrate on love. Your son, Wood.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Sure. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks a lot to everybody. This is an important issue that you'll be hearing.
That was June 8th, 1977 in San Francisco. A young Lucia Chappell reported on the March for IMRU Gay Media Collective long before the founding of This Way Out.
This is Lucia Chappell for IMRU. I'm talking to Frank Zerilli, one of the organizers of this demonstration. Frank, how many people do you think are here?
We have no idea, but it's larger than anything we've ever done in Los Angeles before, including the Christopher Street West Parade. It's unbelievable. 12 bars in town have closed, and the owners, many of the owners of them, are here. They're urging their customers to come to the demonstration.
We're getting ready to start. Please be so aware. And we're starting up this way. Take your time when we get up on the boulevard.
We want a right, not your kid. We want a right, not your kid.
We're on the south side of Hollywood Boulevard. And there's another group on the north side of Hollywood Boulevard. This is quite a large demonstration tonight.
My science is Turner Burn.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so.
Leviticus chapter 20, verse 13.
Human rights are here to stay. Anita Bryant, go away.
3, 5, 7, 9. Let the ends are mighty.
We have reached the Long Prairie Park. And there are still marchers waiting to begin at Hollywood High School.
Welcome to the first Los Angeles Gay Anxiety Workshop.
It doesn't look like the park is going to be nearly big enough to hold the number of people.
The events of last Tuesday in Dade County signaled the beginning of a national emergency. Not only for gay people, but for all people who dare to believe that there is still a constitution of the United States. I remember an incident 4 years ago when I was walking through an amusement park holding hands with my lover and was called queer by a child 6 years old, and from that day forward I've been all too aware of who the child molesters in this society are.
And we're joined by Lucia Chappell, who you had just heard reporting live from the LA March in June 13th of 1977. Welcome to your own This Way Out program, Lucia.
Thank you, Brian. It's so nice being had. I remember running out of KPFK with whatever sound equipment I could get and racing to the site, managing to get to the front of the march where Frank Zerilli was. Frank was Troy Perry's confidential assistant, the head of Metropolitan Community Churches, and he was instrumental in, you know, these were the days before we had email, before we had all those things. It was by telephone. You call 10 people and I'll call 10 people.
You, as a social justice minister for the MCC Church, can you talk about what it means today in remembering who Anita Bryant was and even how she coalesced and helped the queer community organize to fight? But where are we now?
The Anita Bryant phenomenon had so much to do with visibility. Suddenly, people really wanted to come out. It was that moment of, it was a do or die, now or never. This is getting up in my face, and now I'm gonna get off my butt.
So what do we hope to gain from remembering Anita Bryant?
How to be angry and how to express that rage creatively, and how to express it as community.
Well, thanks, Lucia Chappelle, for being on This Way Out.
In 1998, Dade County passed a new gay and lesbian rights ordinance that remains until this day, which conservative Christian groups attempted and failed to repeal in 2002. In 2014, the commission would expand the ordinance to include gender identity in an 8-3 vote. Despite referendum threats from opponents, no effort succeeded. Today, the fight for LGBTQIA+ rights and equality continues. I'm Brian DeShazer for This Way Out.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Wendy Natividad and David Hunt and produced by Brian DeShazer, who also produced this week's Anita Bryant feature with thanks to Lucia Chappelle, David Hunt, the Pacifica Radio Archives, and the American Archive of Public Broadcasting. America and Anita Bryant performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on WVEW Brattleboro, Vermont, 3CH Wooden, Victoria, KUNM Albuquerque, New Mexico, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Hi, this is Cecil Prescott. Celeste Carey and I are the co-hosts for More Talk Radio, which airs on KBOO FM 90.7 on Mondays